Yes, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the ongoing Advance the Elite Meditators of the Universe group. This is for those people who have meditated before. So if you've come for the introductory to meditation class, the introduction class, the four lessons for those who've never meditated before, that is in the room to my right, with excellent teachers, well trained, in order to guide you on the first steps of meditation. But if you haven't done much meditation before and you come into this class, it can be very difficult, where you have to sit for 45 minutes without moving, just one nod, one burp, and that's it. You'll be blacklisted. It's not true, of course, I'm only exaggerating. But, you know, if you can't do the 45 minutes or 40 minutes, then it is a bit difficult for others. So that's why we try and get people started off in the intro course, and then they can come in here and see how they go. But in this course, we take a different part of meditation, and the part which I'm going to introduce today is bringing joy into the meditation, because sometimes people feel that meditation is like going to the dentist. Sorry, dentist, anyone dentist here, but it's much happier than that. This is a meditation where we relax our body so deeply, even the body feels happy. This is one of the reasons why that people like laying on recliners by the beach, just in the beautiful weather, not too hot, not too cold. Because if there's no aches, no pains, no force on the body relaxes, opens up, eases up. And you know that when you are afraid or you try your control, you can feel the body sort of contracting, tensing, and causes a lot of health issues. But also before that time, that when it relaxes, opens up, not only you know this is really healthy, but it feels very, very pleasant. The pleasure of a relaxed body. And these are little simple pleasures which people miss. Because when you notice that, when you are mindful of the pleasure of relaxation, then you can stay in that position for a long period of time. You don't have to move. It's effortless. And then the very same reason why you can just let go and relax your body, that you use that on your mind as well. Every now and again, I've just come back from teaching over in Sydney, every now and again you see people, they complain, oh, meditation's so tough. And I said, what on earth are you talking about? So, I've got to try this and try that, and I think, oh my goodness, where have you been getting your teachings from? Meditation is like relaxing the body. You don't tense up the body, and you don't tense up the mind. You let it be loose, free, relax. If you try and tense up the body, and you have to sit this particular way, you can never get relaxation. You can only hold that through force. But when you're laying back on a recliner by the beach, does that take any effort? And you feel very, very healthy and easy and happy. The same with your human mind. We learn how to look at our human mind and stop pushing it around. There's a magic word in meditation. You talk about it a lot, but you do it very little. Let it be. Stop controlling. Stop trying to make things happen. But just be with life as it happens, without driving it according to your agendas. Let it be. So, we do that in meditation. And after we've been doing this relaxing the body, which is really important, because If you don't relax the body, your body becomes very painful sometimes. Especially you've got to sit for 45 minutes. And often that people complain that they get so tense afterwards. There's something wrong there. Meditation should be ease of the body, ease of the mind. So when we get to the ease of the mind, because I've been away for a couple of weeks teaching meditation over in Jhana Grove and the last few days over in Sydney, that I invented something called the peace-o-meter. And if you want to know what that is, it's ask yourself right now, are you agitated or are you relaxed and peaceful? Give it a number from 1 to 10, how peaceful you are, how agitated you are. 1 is very peaceful, 10 is agitated. Now, I don't care what that number is. The whole point of that exercise, when I ask you to assess, give it a number, how peaceful, how agitated you are, I got you to look at what I call the peaceometer. What you were aware of to give a number to how peaceful or how agitated you were, what you were looking at, that's what I call the peaceometer. A dial in your mind which you can be aware of, which tells you just how relaxed, how peaceful or how agitated you really are. Now once you are mindful of that, once you can focus on that, once you can keep looking on that, you can actually learn just how to move that needle closer and closer to one, to really peaceful. And you learn. It's called what mindfulness gives you, the feedback business. You learn from your mindfulness. You're watching that peace-o-meter. This makes it more tense, going in the wrong direction. So do the opposite. Don't try and struggle and strive. Just let things be. Be in the present moment. Forget about the past. It is unchangeable. And you don't learn from the past as much as you learn from the present. That's why many people are stupid. They're not learning from the past. They're avoiding the lessons of the present. So we stay with the present moment. Future is made in the present moment. So look at the present moment again. That is where all the action of life is. So you find out when you stop worrying about past and future, it goes closer and closer, closer to one, closer and closer to peacefulness. You learn from watching this peaceometer how to be peaceful. It gives you feedback. And you'll find the more peaceful you become, the more happy you become. Peace is happiness. You're enjoying the meditation. This is so nice. Oh, so peaceful. Oh. After a while though, sometimes people get bored of peace. So all you need to do is start thinking again of all your problems. And you say, I'm going back to peace. I did this once with somebody. They were on a 3-month range retreat at Bodhinyana Monastery and they were getting bored. And my solution was I needed something, or the monastery needed something from town, so I sent them to the shopping mall. When they came back in, oh, I'm not bored anymore. Please don't send me into that crazy world again. So sometimes we can take for granted the joy and the happiness of being at peace. But in the meditation, look for that. Look for that quality when you get peaceful of joy. And then, usually those who have been meditating here before, you can stay with peace as long as you like if you can really be aware of it. But for most people, they don't know how to be aware of such a subtle thing called the peaceometer. Maybe for a few seconds, but because of lack of training, we don't really know where to look sometimes, we lose it. Which is one of the reasons we then go to the more traditional Buddhist meditations of watching the breathing, breathing in and breathing out. But I was talking, even this morning and yesterday, about one of my favorite monks, still alive, called Ajahn Gandha. And it's so hard to get any teachings out of him. He came and spent a time here many, many years ago. And when he did teach meditation, it was so simple, but actually quite profound. When he gave any meditation instructions, it wouldn't be like me when I can talk for hours, about 30 seconds and he was done. So what he would tell people, when you breathe in, sabha. The word sabha means nice and easy and joyful and blissful and happy. So intentionally when you breathe in, add sabha to your breathing. And as you breathe out, sabha. Oh, that's really nice. So what you're doing, you're actually generating joy with every in-breath and every out-breath. Breathing in, sabha. Oh, yes. Breathe out, sabha. Whoa. And after a while, you get into it. You can add that happiness, and it becomes real. You're breathing in and breathing out with joy and happiness. It overcomes the negative mind which people have in the Western world. Always we're looking for the faults in things, the mistakes, the things which people do wrong, the flaws. We always look at the flaws, never at the ceilings. Our mind is always looking down, never up. To the happiness of life, which is there, if you ever want to look at it. So we deliberately, intentionally, we don't use force, we just change our breath, breathing in, sabai, breathing out, sabai. And after a while, you don't need to say that word anymore because it is what I said many years ago, the beautiful breath, the delightful breath. You look for it, you find it. And with the delightful breath, one of the reasons why this is very, very effective, it means you don't need to put any effort at all in the meditation. You don't need to try anymore. Anything beautiful. If you're lucky enough to have a free evening and you watch the sunset, it's one of these gorgeous sunsets over the Indian Ocean, the reds and purples and golds, an explosion of streaky color. Do you put effort into watching that? Those of you who like sport, do you have to put effort into watching a tennis match? If it's your favorite movie, do you put effort into watching a movie? Is it a struggle? Halfway through you think, oh, I managed to do an hour, it was only an hour to go. It's effortless and timeless. Same now, if you can do that with your meditation, because it's joyful. Breathing in, then 45 minutes go so fast. And enjoy every moment. You're cultivating the perception of joy, which aids the meditation because it takes out the effort, the struggle, which people are always trying to do stuff in this world instead of letting it happen. And it also increases your mindfulness. The more there's joy in the mind, the more powerful is your mind. The mind can see deeper. And it can feel deeper. It can know more when it's empowered by joy. That's why negativity actually closes off the mind. It actually masks the glitter of the world, the sparkle of the world, and only sees grey, terrible stuff. So if you want to develop beautiful meditation, strong mindfulness, and a happy mind, then breathe in sabha and breathe out sabha. And then it makes your meditation much better. And if it's not just for you, it's for all the people who have to put up with you this evening when you go home. When you are happy, you're a much easier person to live with. Trust me on that. If you don't know that, ask your partner, ask your kids. When you come home from meditation, oh, daddy, mummy, you're so nice when you've been to meditation. Instead of being a pain in the you know where. So, that is the instructions for today. So, now is the time to walk the talk. And we don't do walking, we sit the talk here. So if you'd like to get yourselves in a nice meditation position, you can be sitting on a chair, sitting on the floor, some people being in their own little chairs. We still haven't yet got anyone bringing in their armchair, which is technically allowed, but I don't know how you get it through the doors by yourself. So imagine getting a lazy boy rolling in here for your meditation. That'd be really cool. Should I carry on giving people ideas like this, Mr. President? He says no. Be careful. So, the chairs here are good enough. So, you've got your chair, your stool, your cushions, your favourite cushion. And now, close your eyes to begin the meditation.
Say something profound.
Okay. Must be a complaint then. With your eyes closed, start collecting your mind, bringing it together into this moment. Doesn't matter what you have to do after this meditation session, or this evening, or tomorrow, or the next day. Doesn't matter where you come from, what experiences, pleasant or unpleasant, in the past. It's like bringing those tentacles into this moment. In the Hindu meditation tradition, they liken it to a tortoise, bringing in its head and its limbs, bringing it inside its shell. Your body, your mind, now. And when it comes into this moment, then be aware, put your mindfulness on your physical feelings, on your bodily feelings. It's easy to watch bodily feelings. Sometimes we don't have the opportunity, we're too busy going somewhere, but now we can feel our body. And in order to get the best possible posture means the position in which we sit in meditation, start with your legs. Be aware of your legs. If you don't know what I mean by being aware of your legs, ask your legs, how are you doing? What's it like down there? And if, when you ask the question, you become aware, how do the legs feel, then the next thing to do is, if there is a problem, you know, your legs aren't comfortable, then please move. It's not a question of enduring. Use mindfulness to find solutions, to find the optimum, the best position for your legs. Once your legs are comfortable, you move up to your butt, your bottom. How is that? If you want to fidget, it's best to fidget now rather than during the middle of the meditation. Fidgeting is just a mindful way, a kind way of getting into a good position so your bottom doesn't hurt. It's not just for comfort. This is an essential part of the practice of developing mindfulness, arousing it, finding the ability to take the mindfulness in this moment and focus it on one area of your life. This is your body. So then you look at your back, include your shoulders. Do you need to straighten your back? Or let it go loose, lean forward, lean back. Sometimes it's good to experiment, trial and error, until you find the best position for your back, mindfulness and kindness. So right now I'm aware of the feelings in my back. Straighten it a little bit, stretching it, which I always love doing. Now I found my back likes to stay in this position. You find this out because you're aware, looking in the correct place, and not being limited by what you're told to do by books and experts. Buddhism, meditation, has always said to find out for yourself. Discover how you feel, aware right now of the feelings in your back until you get the best position. Then you don't tend to have back problems. And then your hands. Where your hands are defines the position of your arms. So ask your hands and your arms, are you comfortable there? Asking a question arouses mindfulness. How are they? Move them around if you need to, until you find best position. Then your head. Head upon the neck. People do have aches and pains in their neck, and sometimes even migraines, headaches, caused because the head is not properly balanced on top of the neck. Not too far forward, not too far back, to the left or right. You can move it around just to make sure you find the best position. Mindfulness together with kindness. And once you've done the best you can for your body, you see, it takes time. We don't rush through this stage. If you want to get deeper later on, your foundation has to be very meticulous. And once you're really comfortable and happy with your bodily position, there'll always be some irritations in your body, aches or pains. And this is a great opportunity for learning one of the marvelous ways we can use mindfulness and kindness to improve our health. I go focusing on a part of my body which is irritating, or even painful. Like last night, I don't know why, but my neck is a bit stiff. So I'm focusing on that feeling. You look at your body, zoom in on one part which needs some attention. This is also practice for later on in meditation. Better to be mindful, keep the mindfulness there, and see what happens when kindness walks side by side with mindfulness. So I feel the ache in my neck. You may have an ache or pain somewhere. Aware of it, kind to it, and see if the ache, the pain gets less. As we discover what alleviates tension, which is one of the big causes of the ache, the pain. Stay with it. Not only are you developing awareness and the ability to maintain awareness, you soon find this is a highly effective way of healing your own body and keeping it strong. So tightness in my neck is loosened up now. I know how my mind affects my body and how to use that connection to relax and heal my body. And I usually go on with this until my body feels just so relaxed. Feels comfy, like when I first wake up in the morning. So you know, you don't really feel like getting out of bed. You're comfortable. Or like I imagine people feel after they've been to a spa, had a full massage, hot baths, but it feels really no tension at all. That's usually the feeling I get, and it's really pleasant. And I look for that pleasure. I focus on the delight of relaxation. When you do that, it has an effect. Your relaxation goes deeper when you focus on the bliss of it. No tightness, nothing pulling any of your bodily parts. Nothing pressing against anything. It's like your body is expanded, loose, free. Even the sound of the birds, you don't push against that sound. Your mind goes out and embraces everything. No tension, no struggle, perceiving happiness. The happiness of peace. You can enjoy this as long as you like. Those of you who want to now focus on your mind, hopefully by now your mindfulness has been developed strong enough through these preliminary exercises, you can have a better look at the peaceometer, asking yourself, how peaceful am I? How agitated? From 1 to 10, what's your number? What you look at, what you're aware of, is this thing which God says how peaceful you are. When you can maintain your awareness on that, just like awareness on an irritation, you soon find how to make your mind more peaceful. How to get less tense inside. And you'll find out for yourself aspirations, goals, the frustration when you don't get there, or at least don't get there as fast as you expect. That just increases the tension, the irritation. when you let it be, stay in this moment, just being here, not trying to improve anything, just being here. Then you find the needle gets closer and closer to peace. Deep peace. And see if you can also notice how peace is associated with happiness. A particular flavor of joy. The joy of contentment, being at ease, free of a burden. It's the same happiness when you've been carrying a heavy backpack. You pull it down, put your feet up and relax. Keep being aware of the peaceometer. See how far you can get that needle to be close to absolute peace. When you think you need, and just watch your breathing. Breathing in, sabai. Breathing out, sabai. Breathing in as joyfully, peacefully, happily as you can. And don't just focus on the breathing, also focus on how free and how joyful it is. See if you can develop that perception of joy with the breath. What you look for is what you find. I'm now going to be peaceful and silent until the end of this meditation session. very close to the end of the meditation. So how do you feel? How much joy did you manage to generate? How much peace, awareness, freedom? This is the result of meditation. I'm now going to ring the gong 3 times. As usual, please listen every sound of the gong. When the gong finishes sounding for the 3rd time, then come out from your meditation.
So, any questions there?
Very good. Okay, from Indonesia, from Costa Rica, and from Germany. First of all, from Germany, can meditation help to overcome fear? Really a lot of fear, yes. I know my preceptor, who the Thai meditators here, Somdet Buddhajan, he told me that, now he was a very senior monk in Thailand, in the hierarchy, got very busy. But he told me that when he was a young monk, he trained in meditation, it must have been about 60 years ago. He was meditating in the jungle. When he came out of meditation, he found this big snake in his lap. The snake had just, been attracted because, monks love lots of kindness and softness. And just the snake wanted a warm place, to have a kip, have a nap. So he chose this monk's lap. And he said the amazing thing was that when he opened his eyes, he recognized that was a totally venomous snake. One bite and he'd be dead. But he had no fear. Not the slightest bit of anxiety or fear. And he just waited there, giving kindness to the snake. Well, sit there as long as you like. And then the snake just, when it was finished, just got up and slithered away. He said the amazing thing about that experience was a total lack of fear. And there was an example that when your mind is very, very peaceful, you don't get afraid. So meditation does help overcome fear, but you've got to get nice and peaceful first of all. If you have, what is fear anyway? I always say that most fear is the anticipation of losing something that you're very attached to, you cherish, you think is central to your existence or your happiness. And when it's about to be taken away, what am I going to do? But, people survive. So you don't, it's not essential, nothing is essential there. So it does overcome fear. And also, so much of what we're afraid about never happens. I usually tell people, if whatever you're afraid of, it doesn't happen at all. It's usually something much worse. Okay, I'll crack somebody up. But it's true, isn't it? Because we don't know what's going to happen. Actually, you shouldn't say that. It's being very negative. If you, whatever you're afraid of, a lot of times, sometimes you make happen. But if you just let it be, it usually doesn't happen. So, one of the stories, I recall being a kid. I got my first bicycle when I was about 11 or 12, and I saved up. Mother and father, they put something in as my birthday present. And as a kid, riding a bicycle for the first time, I was afraid of falling off. I had fear. And it meant I grabbed onto the handlebars so hard. I remember my knuckles went white, and I was so stiff. And that is why I kept falling off. Fear kept pushing me over because I was too tight, too stiff. You couldn't sort of move your body when you went around corners. But when I just relaxed and let go, then you can go so fast like kids do. You know, look, Mum, no hands. Look, Mum, no teeth. You weren't afraid at all. So that was when you're not afraid, you tended not to fall off. So yes, meditations can certainly help overcome fear, even just, you know, some of the chronic fears and anxiety people have. And from Costa Rica, how can I use meditation to deal with rejections towards the evil thing that people do so that I can keep my peace? I see people hurting each other. I'd like to learn how to let go of my negativity towards others. You know, if somebody hurts another person, says really bad things, hurtful things, or does really bad things, it is something you can do to intervene. Wonderful, just intervene. But a lot of times there's nothing really you can do. And so then you try and understand what I said yesterday about judging people. Why do people do bad things to one another? And sometimes they think it's a good idea at the time. They're into things like punishment. You hurt me, so I'm going to hurt you. And again, just remember from my childhood, you know, the old tit for tat. You know, he started it, teacher. No, he started it first. No, he started it. You can't really blame others. You both started it. So because of that, you know, it's like Kim Jong-un and Mr. Trump. He started it. No. Kim Jong-un started it. No. USA started it. I mean, they're playing with big toys. That's why it's dangerous. And they don't have a teacher in the playground to stop them. So I see people hurting each other and I'd like to learn how to let go of my negativity towards others. You know, there's sometimes we open the door of our heart, as I was saying last night. It's, you know, one of those great similes. Open the door of your heart, even to life, and to people doing stupid things to each other. You know that those of you who have children, we would never like to see our children getting hurt, falling off their bicycles or getting diseases. But, you know, medicine knows that you have to let your children get those fevers because that's where they build up the immunity. You have to let them get their skin scraped so they can build up again. Infections actually teach the body how to deal with them in the future. So if you wrap up a kid in cotton wool so it never gets a scrape or a scratch or a sickness, of course they become very vulnerable later on in life. It's the same way that with the difficulties and pain of life. If we don't have them, we don't learn very much, we don't get resilience. So when you see people hurting each other, there's something you can do, please do it. But if there's nothing you can do, you know, sometimes the hurt teaches us a lesson, teaching them a lesson. Why do people do this? Oh, sometimes the really gross stuff is unimaginable, but you know, hopefully that people learn that you don't need to hurt people to make improvements in your life. What problem gets solved by hurting others? You know, what solution to crime is achieved by putting people in jail or by punishing them? I can't see that myself. So anyway, what you can do is to make sure you don't hurt yourself. And if people do say rotten things about you, always maybe have a choice. You don't need to be upset. You have a choice not to be. Exercise that choice. Lastly, from Indonesia, how to sit up well for 45 minutes without tension. When I don't put force on my back, it becomes slouched quite bad because I spent my childhood with a bad posture. So one way is to wear a straight jacket when you meditate. Put a stick down your back so you're really straight. Now those are extremes. First of all, if you want to get good posture and you've got sort of posture problems, it's best to do exercise, you know, yoga, stretching, getting your muscles really good. But if you want to do it without tension, you can sit on a chair. I know that some people are quite proud. They don't want to sit on a chair thinking they're not really first-class meditators. People who sit on a chair are namby-pamby cream puffs. They're not real meditators. The Buddha never sat on a chair, blah, 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 which is really bad. So instead, what we do is, you know, the only reason I sit on a chair, sit on the floor, is I'm really comfortable like this. I'm in more pain on a chair because I, you know, haven't really sat on a chair for that length of time, except when I'm on, the aircraft. Even then, it's great if you can get a spare seat next to you and you can cross your legs. But for those of you who, it's okay to sit on the a chair to meditate. So, from Indonesia, if you want to sit well, 45 minutes, get a nice chair and even lean back. Get yourself nice and comfortable. So there's hardly any tension on your back. And in fact, somebody did send me an article that the best posture for your back, the one which causes less problems later on in life for most people, is to lean back 15 degrees from the vertical, they say. That's the best, most comfortable posture for most people. There's always exceptions. Which is why, if you look at those chairs you're sitting on, the back is never vertical, it's actually at an angle, 15 degrees. I know there's a physiotherapist over there smiling at me, because she knows that's true. Because back a little bit, the best posture. So if you have problems with your back, just get on one of the chairs and just lean back, not too far, and that's most comfortable for you. So don't think that one posture is better than another posture. That you have to sit like this, you have to sit like that. No, you find out for yourself. It's Pali Pachatang Vedittabho Vinyuhi, to be understood, each wise person for themselves. That goes for your posture. Okay, so thank you from those questions from Indonesia, Costa Rica and Germany. Hope I answered them to your satisfaction. Now, how about some questions from Perth? Always remember, I got a question here from somebody from Indonesia. That's what they brought over here. It was actually, they were sitting over there, because they said, well, we never get a chance to ask questions. So they pretended to be someone from Indonesia, so we could answer a question. A few weeks ago, we had a question here from Mohammed from Yemen. And I thought, where are you sitting in the hall here? Because you put your name as Mohammed from Yemen, you're bound to actually to get your question answered. So all you out there, if you want your question to get priority, put a funny name. You know, I used to like Jimi Hendrix, so put Jimi Hendrix, and when it comes to the country from heaven, and I'm sure you get your question prioritized. Okay, any other questions from the floor? Going, gone. Okay, so let's pay respects to the Buddha Dhamma Sangha, and then we can do what we want to do. There is a KM meeting this evening, Kalyana Mitra Group meeting. And also, should actually announce Sunday week, 7th of May, we have our Waisak celebration here. Celebration of the birth, enlightenment, and final passing away of the Buddha. An event not to be missed. I often say on these celebrations we have, you know, increase in merit. I think probably for Waisak it must be triple merit at least. Not double demerits, triple merits.
Just bow. Mm-hmm.